You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show. It is a Wednesday, October 26th, and my pleasure to be with you. On the second hour, we're going to be talking from Germany, from Deutschland, Berlin, to Dr. Susan Neiman. Dr. Neiman, who is a professor of moral philosophy, interestingly enough. I came across an article that she had written. There's a religion and ethics website, ABC Religion and Ethics. I don't think it's related to the American Broadcasting Company, but had a lengthy article from her about the Book of Job. And Dr. Neiman contends that Western philosophy does not begin with Aristotle and Plato, but it actually begins with Job, because Job really asks the fundamental question, which is the beginning point of all philosophy, and that is the problem of evil, or why do we suffer? And she's written, as I said, an extensive article about this, and I look forward to having her on the program in the second hour. And the miracle of modern communication technology. The title of the piece that she wrote, and there's a link to it on the show's blog page, mikeallenshow.blogspot.com, if you want to check it out. The Rationality of the World, a Philosophical Reading of the Book of Job. The title captured me for one reason, because I've been reading a book that a friend gave me by Leon Cass, who was once on President Bush's Council for Bioethics, University of Chicago, writing very much from a secular perspective, but he has a book called The Beginning of Wisdom, and he argues for reading the book of Genesis philosophically, not necessarily theologically. In other words, his contention is there's profound wisdom, which is the nature of philosophy etymologically, right? It's the love of wisdom. And so the book of Genesis, there is a rich resource there for helping understand who we are, the nature of the world, because Genesis, if we can get past all our hang-ups about reconciling faith and science, the book of Genesis has some profound philosophical insights on the nature of the world and the human condition. Well, Dr. Neiman refers to the book of Job the same way, a philosophical reading of the book of Job. She begins her article by saying, "I am a philosopher who believes that Western philosophy begins not with Plato, but elsewhere and earlier, with the book of Job. That is because I believe that the problem of evil is the central point where philosophy begins and threatens to stop. It's this experience," she argues, "of inexplicable suffering and basest injustice that forces us to ask whether our lives have meaning or whether human existence may be deeply incomprehensible." Yeah, I totally get that. I think that's the nub of the question. To me, it's not a question of whether you go with, let's say, Catholicism or Protestantism. To me, if there is a God, and if there is meaning to this whole thing, that for me, the fullness of any revealed faith that makes any sense in dealing with this question in particular is Christianity, and the fullness of Christianity is Catholicism. My temptation would not be to reject Catholicism for some other faith. My temptation would be to reject Christianity, Catholicism in its fullness, for atheism, for a belief that there is no meaning, that we are, in fact, accidental residents on this tiny orb hurtling through this vast empty universe. But as I think it was G.K. Chesterton said, we'll credit him anyway. Maybe we'll put it on the internet that it has to be true. But Chesterton said, when bad times come, the temptation is to turn away from God. But in heaven's name, to what? So anyway, I got on a little squirrel trail there. But we'll talk to Dr. Susan Neiman, who is the director of the Einstein Forum and a moral philosopher in Berlin, Germany, in the second hour. We can look forward to that. Some other things we'll talk about today, the different looks of love. Also, how EWTN has finally jumped the shark, and it has to do with this current election, unfortunately. More wackiness from Genesis, the abortion seamless garment question, taken on, I think, with great aplomb by Charles Camosi, who teaches at Fordham, and looking back at Game 1 in Cleveland. Sorry, Cubs. Tough start, but it's a long series, right? If you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, you can call me or text, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. I'll give you the question of the day at the beginning of the next segment. I told you about this little jewel of a book that I found. It's a prayer journal by Flannery O'Connor. If you're familiar with the Southern Gothic American writer, Flannery O'Connor, who was a devout Catholic who died young. I've read a couple of her essays, short stories, and I really want to read more of Flannery O'Connor. But this is fascinating because not only do they have the text from some of her own prayer journals, but they even have snapshots of her own handwriting in her prayer journals. A writer who found that it was with a pen sometimes that she could express her thoughts and prayers to God. And I want you to hear a little bit of this prayer from, this is one of her many, of course, but Flannery O'Connor's prayers. She says this, "My dear God, supplication. This is the only one of the four I am competent in." Assume she means the different types or themes of prayer, supplication, praise, for example, adoration, confession, and so forth. She said, "It takes no supernatural grace to ask for what one wants, and I have asked you bountifully, O Lord. I believe it is right to ask you too, and to ask our mother to ask you, but I don't want to overemphasize this angle of my prayers." O'Connor continues, "Help me to ask you, O Lord, for what is good for me to have, for what I can have, and do your service by having." I think that's a very insightful prayer, very mature prayer on her part. Certainly we are free to ask for that which we want as long as we do so in a spirit of a filial trust, of trust in God our Father who knows what's best for us. Sometimes it's through the petition, the petitionary prayer. Sometimes it's through that, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, the sense of fortitude in prayer. And Jesus talked about praying and not losing heart. Sometimes it's in that constancy in prayer that God can be at work doing one of the things that prayer does, and that's to change us, not simply to change things. And God, through that constancy of persistent prayer, can shape us and change us and cause us to reflect and examine ourselves more deeply on our motives for asking. I always think about that passage in 1 Samuel where Hannah, one of two wives of her husband Elimelech, continued to plead and to beg for a male child because Elimelech's other wife, Elkanah. There we go. We'll get this right. Anyway, Elkanah's other wife, Peninnah, had been a fertile myrtle, right? She had been producing offspring, and she rubbed it in Hannah's face. Again, cultures and circumstances change. Human nature does not. The problem, therefore, with bigamy or polygamy is what you would expect it to be, competition. And so Peninnah rubs in Hannah's face the fact that she can bear children, and Hannah has apparently been forgotten by God. But I think in one of the most beautiful and poignant things, Hannah continues, every year they go up to Shiloh, to the place of worship where sacrifices are offered there in the presence of the high priest Eli, and Hannah continues to pour out her prayers for a child. She wants a son. And she prays with such anguish and emotion. Eli thinks she's drunk when in fact it's the cry of a desperate heart. But I think the interesting thing is in the midst of her prayer, she says, in essence, Lord, if you will give me a male child, as soon as the child is weaned, let me see exactly what she says. She prays, if you will not forget thy maidservant, but will give to your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. Now you wonder, in all the years that she had prayed, year by year, going faithfully up to Shiloh, and she prayed like that, with that sense of surrender. And it was when she came to that point finally, praying with a passionate desire, but also with surrender, that her request was granted. Sometimes our Lord takes our desires and shapes them even through the midst of our persistent prayers. Anyway, back to Flannery O'Connor. She says, help me to ask you, O Lord, for what is good to me to have, for what I can have, and do your service by having. I've been reading Mr. Kafka, and I feel his problem of getting grace, but I see it doesn't have to be that way for the Catholic who can go to communion every day. The Monsignor today said, it was the business of reason, not emotion, the love of God. The emotion would be a help. I realized last time that it would be a selfish one. Oh, dear God, the reason is very empty. I suppose mine is also lazy. We'll get back to these a little bit later. I love Flannery O'Connor and her prayer journals. We'll be back with a question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
You're back on the Mike Allen Show on this October 26th, feast day of St. Alfred the Great. St. Alfred the Great, a renowned Christian monarch. You know, we need saints like that. Chesterton used to talk about how we need saints who are plumbers so that every plumber can look to a particular saint and say, that's the kind of plumber that I want to be. We also need, therefore, saints who are rulers and kings. And in the midst of our current political climate, perhaps we need to recover an appreciation for people like Alfred the Great, who was, yes, a Christian king and monarch, and who took his faith very seriously and ruled in great benevolence over his people. Yes, if I had to choose between a democracy that's given us the candidates we have now, and a monarchy headed by somebody like St. Alfred the Great, give me the latter, please, and more of it. Maybe that makes me somehow an anti-American. I don't know. 5734-BREAD-4, I don't think so. 5734-BREAD-4, we just have to recognize every governing system has its dark side, for sure. There's a tyranny of the majority as well, as they say. Anyway, if you want to chime in, I'm asking a question today. Yesterday, my daughter's birthday, 22 years old. We had a nice celebration last night at the Allen household. She requested, it's really good when my 22-year-old still wants her dad's world-famous chicken nuggets that I make by hand, cut up the chicken. Well, I got to give my wife props for cutting up the chicken last night. But I have this great batter that it's from an old Southern Living recipe book. The key is I add extra pepper, so they're really good. And that double dip, right? Flour into the egg milk mixture, back into the flour, into the hot oil. Mmm, they good. Anyway, but then, of course, after dinner, the obligatory cake and ice cream. My question of the day is, what is your preferred birthday dessert? I mean, hopefully those who love you maybe give you that option or ask you that question, at least every once in a while, every few years. What is the dessert that you prefer? Some people don't go in for cake. Maybe they'll have cake because it's tradition, you know. But they would, if they, all things being equal, they'd prefer a trifle or maybe some cobbler or a big cookie. How about you? Your preferred birthday dessert. You can ask for it for anything. Now, I can't grant it to you, but we can at least imagine that I've given it to you. I guess for me, when it comes to cakes, it begins and ends with red velvet. A good red velvet cake. Oh, yes, please. I do remember the year that my wife decided that she was going to try to make me a blue velvet cake, you know, being a Kentucky fan and all that. But she didn't have any blue food coloring. So for some reason, she got it in her mind she could combine a couple of colors and get blue. Maybe she was sick that day at school where they talked about primary colors because it turned out to be a pine green cake. It was still really tasty because my wife can cook. But anyway, red velvet. Number two choice cake-wise, I'd go with German chocolate. Love me some German chocolate cake. And then after that, you know, I don't know, maybe my grandmother's old jam cake, which was really, really good. But if I were just going to go with strict dessert, I probably told you before, my favorite dessert is a blackberry cobbler. It doesn't have to be even homemade. I mean, it can be something like a Pet Ritz or a Mrs. Smith's or whatever. Right out of the oven, piping hot blackberry cobbler with, now, got to get this right, with vanilla bean ice cream on it so that the, you got to have the cobbler, it's got to be piping hot so that the ice cream is melting as you put it on. And then you get that nice mixture of the melted ice cream with the cobbler. Oh, yeah. I think for my last birthday, that's what I had. We eschewed the cake and went straight to the cobbler. So give me a shout. Some comments we've gotten on Facebook. Megan says carrot cake. That's where you eat something fattening and try to pretend it's good for you. Kim says, just give me the ice cream. That's where I went last night, Kim. I skipped over the cake, straight to the chocolate ice cream. And then Chelsea Z says, scotch. Chelsea's due to be back on the show. Chelsea Zimmerman, hopefully this Friday. We'll see if we can work it out. 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. I didn't see a lot of the Game 1 of the World Series last night. I understand. I think Kenny Lofton threw out the first pitch. Is that right, Alex? Did you see that? Kenny Lofton, yeah, who was on the Indians, I think, back in the 90s where they had their two World Series appearances back in 94 and or was it 95? Maybe it was 95 when they lost to the Braves. 95 World Series was canceled. Or was it the other way around? I digress. I think it was the 95 series. And then also again in 97, I believe it was, when they dropped one to the Marlins. So Kenny Lofton, a great player, back. They didn't have Charlie Sheen, unfortunately. But they did have Casey Kluber, who pitched a dominating Game 1 performance, just adding to his postseason resume of the 30-year-old this year. Checking out baseballreference.com and his stats. Currently 3-1. I didn't realize he had dropped that, the only playoff game Cleveland has lost. They lost to Toronto after being up 3-0. Casey Kluber, though, with an ERA of 0.74. That'll get her done in the playoffs. And, you know, to the dismay of Cubs fans, there is precedent. Yes, you've got to have more than simply one pitcher. But there is precedent in baseball history of a dominant pitcher really controlling a series. Because I guess theoretically, that dominant pitcher can pitch Game 1, can pitch Game 4, can pitch Game 7. I think, for example, of Jose Rijo back in 1990 for the Cincinnati Reds. That was the year the Reds made it into the World Series. No one thought they had a prayer against the Bash Brothers of the Oakland A's. I certainly didn't, and I'm as big a Reds fan as they come, but I thought the Reds might get swept. But what happened was good pitching beats good hitting, and Jose Rijo came out and won game one in a dominating sort of a fashion. And then he turned right around and won game four, where that ends up being the only games that it took for the Reds. You think about Oral Hershiser back in 88 and his scintillating performance. One great starter, phenomenal starter, can set the tone for a series. And we'll just have to see that the Cubs, I think, are going to desperately need to break in and win game two, or they may find themselves in trouble. Cleveland kind of making the case. I know the Cubs seem like America's darling, but don't forget about us. There's an article here from The Big Lead by Kyle Koster. He says, don't get duped into feeling sympathy for the Chicago Cubs. He said the Cubs, fresh off winning their first NL pennant since 45, are nearly 2-1 favorites to win the franchise's first World Series since 08. That's 1908. My grandfather was 1 year old. A fan base that's been wandering in the desert, dying of thirst for over a century, can see the promised land. Nice Moses reference there. They're a good team, possibly a great team. Goes on to talk about Aroldis Chapman, Joe Maddon, all these and the rest. He says, now what I'm about to admit is not a hot take, it's an honest admission. He said, not a single cell in my body contains any sympathy for them. And in fact, he's annoyed at the over-the-top coverage of the Cubs' quest to win the World Series. And so he goes on to talk about, the virtual ignoring of the Indians' drought of 68 years. He said, is there really that much difference between 11 decades of failure and seven? Mentions of the tribe's dry spell is only included as an afterthought to be tagged on. Is their pain lesser or just not as celebrated? So in this guy's mind, I guess it's down to an issue of justice. Anyway, this guy may be, if you scratch him, he may be a closet Cardinal fan. Who knows? But he says, I don't have any sympathy for the Cubs. So we'll see. I still, evidently, according to one story, I was really hoping that Steve Bartman, the guy who ruined the Cubs, or at least contributed to the collapse of the Cubs back in 2003, I really was hoping they'd bring him in to throw the first pitch in Game 3 in Chicago, but he says he just wants to be left alone. Other big news, sports news, wow. While Cleveland was raising the banner for their NBA championship last night, Golden State, who didn't lose a game last year until mid-December, 24-0 start, opening with a resounding thud, as the headline says in ESPN, against the San Antonio Spurs. Spurs without Tim Duncan, and now with who was it that they signed in the offseason? Paul Gasol. Still have a LaMarcus Aldridge. 129-100, and that's at Golden State. Man, so a team that starts 24-0 last year, 0-1, is Golden State going to trip over all that talent? Could you have too much talent and all the expectation? We'll have to wait and see. When we come back from the break, I'll give you our What Were You Thinking Awards of the Day. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. If you want to learn more about what we're doing at Breadbox Media, And I think one of the really cool things is the development of the parish stream idea, that Catholic parishes, no matter their size, can have Breadbox Media as a sort of communication and catechesis hub for the parish. In other words, they can utilize all the programming we have from all our contributors across the country, each with their own particular personality and temperament and topic, but all through the lens of the Catholic faith. But they can then, therefore, have their own parish stream localized so that the 3-minute commercial breaks every quarter hour can be utilized in a way they see fit, whether it's announcements about the parish, upcoming events, whether it's some sort of leadership minute from the pastor or from someone else in the parish. They can have advertisers from inside the parish, just like they have on the back of their bulletin. And the beautiful thing is the way that we do it, that they can actually receive revenue from the advertisers for the parish's ministry. So it's really a win-win situation all the way around, the parish stream. We've got a number who are already doing that across several dioceses. So if you were interested in that for your own parish, you might contact us here, 573-4-BREAD-4. We can give you some information. Anyway, again, my question of the day, what is your preferred birthday dessert? You can post your comments on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show the handle, or you can call or text me at 573-4-BREAD-4. Alex here running the board, or you can also email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Alex says his favorite birthday dessert, white cake, white buttercream frosting, and then Grater's ice cream, any kind. If you're not from this area, Grater's a ice cream franchise that started in Cincinnati, and whew, rich and delish. Anyway, so good choice there, Alex. He also lists as one of his favorite desserts, German chocolate cake, nice call, and cherry pie with vanilla ice cream. Yes, I can see that and go with that, no doubt. 573-4-BREAD-4, you can chime in. Or maybe you're more like my friend Chelsea Zimmerman, who commented that her favorite dessert was, birthday dessert was scotch. Anyway, we're long overdue for our What Were You Thinking Awards, spanning the globe, looking for examples where human beings did what we often do, acted without thinking. First nominee, this from over in Great Britain, this guy Lee Rutherford was caught going at 129 miles per hour in February. Police followed the 32-year-old in his modified Renault Clio, clocking up some incredible speeds. When they caught him, they asked him what the rush was. Get this, you know, not someone I know is in the hospital dying, had to rush home because somebody was in grave danger, or my wife was having a baby. No, when asked what the rush was, Mr. Rutherford said he wanted to get home and eat his burger and chips. I guess that would be burgers and fries to you and me. Eat his burger and chips while they were still warm. Wow, that's what you came up with? You wanted you wanted to get home fast enough so your fast food would still be hot. Our second, this from Springfield, Illinois. A naked driver was arrested early Tuesday in the downtown area after he hit a curb and got a flat tire. Captain Brian Keenan said the incident occurred about 3 a.m. The naked man, oh, I'm sorry, this is Springfield, Mass. My apologies to Springfield, Illinois. The naked man, 30-year-old Enfield resident Derek Dent, got out of the car and started jumping around in the middle of the street. Well, I guess that's one way to get someone to help. Police, who initially saw Dent's car run a red light, arrested him after a short chase. Oh, my goodness. The only thing I'll say is if you're driving around naked, I sure hope those seats are vinyl. Just saying. Anyway, all right. Our winner, though, we're going to give to the University of Florida. It always comes down to Florida, doesn't it? University of Florida to offer counseling for students offended by Halloween costumes. According to a blog post from administrators at the University of Florida, students offended by insensitive Halloween costumes are being provided with around-the-clock counseling services. If you choose to participate in the Halloween activities, we encourage you to think about your choice of costumes and themes, the school advises in a recent blog post. But they've also let anyone know that anyone who is bothered or offended by the by a particular costume may call the university's counseling services 24/7. Here's what it said. As a community, we aspire to demonstrate integrity, respect, and compassion that strives to maintain an affirming campus climate for all members of our community. If you're troubled by an incident that does occur, please know that there are many resources available. Please take advantage of the seven-day-a-week presence of the You Matter, We Care program at the University of Florida. Trigger warnings at Halloween. That's where we've come. Anyway, lighten up, Francis. 573-4BREAD-4. If you've got your own nominee, we'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. I was very distressed. I actually got a call from a friend of mine last night while I was cooking my chicken nuggets. My friend said he just had to vent. He just had to vent because he was so upset with EWTN. Why he was upset was with EWTN is because EWTN, I guess, you know, the Eternal Word Television Network started by Mother Angelica, EWTN, I guess, had originally scheduled to have as a guest on one of their programs, Michael Maturin. Michael Maturin, who is a Catholic, a convert to the Catholic faith. He also is the nominee for the American Solidarity Party for the presidential election. I've talked a little bit about him before. So if you go Google up American Solidarity Party, you can read about their party platform, which when you look out there at political party platforms, we've often talked about how neither of the two major party platforms, Republican or Democrat, really fully encapsulate Catholic moral teaching. You're not going to find a perfect correspondence, let's just say, between either party when it comes to the fullness of Catholic teaching. You've got to sort of, you know, hold your nose at certain things and prioritize other things. And certainly I get the issue of not voting for the Democratic Party platform because of your commitment to the sanctity of human life and to unborn human life, because the Democrats have been all in on the abortion issue in such a tragic and cruel way for so long, though there are exceptional Democrats like Rebecca Hamilton, for example, that I've had on the program before. But I get that. But there's plenty of problems on the Republican side these days, too, particularly when you look at who the nominee is. Anyway, so the American Solidarity Party, a party that I think very intentionally shapes its party platform around Catholic social teaching, not the establishing of a Catholic theocracy, mind you, but ideas, principles of the common good and a whole view of what it is that leads to human flourishing. Anyway, and Michael Maturin is that nominee, and I've talked about him as someone who's potentially going to get my vote on November 8th. He was supposed to be on EWTN. You think that would be a very friendly place to be. But EWTN ended up canceling the interview. And the reason they gave is that they were concerned about how it could endanger their tax-exempt status, their 501c3. As a Catholic broadcasting network. Okay. Shaky and dubious, but okay. But then, as my friend called me and said, but then he saw promoting this Thursday night, EWTN, Donald Trump in his most revealing interview yet. Raymond Arroyo, known, of course, as the host of The World Over and author of the biography of Mother Angelica, at 8 p.m. Thursday October 27th, EWTN's The World Over with host Raymond Arroyo will air an exclusive interview with Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, which will be of interest to people across the United States. Quote, he reveals the reason he switched his position on the life issue, talks about religious liberty, and speaks to women's concerns about his candidacy. We also spoke about his prayer life, whether he has a favorite saint, and a lot more. Said Arroyo, honestly, this is the most relaxed I've ever seen him on camera. Viewers will be very interested in what he has to say. Now look, you can read between the lines enough to know that Raymond Arroyo is totally in the tank, and he has been, by his own public admission, for Donald Trump for this election. Which I think is extremely problematic. Talk about concerns about your tax-exempt status, for heaven's sake. It's shameful what they did to Michael Maturin, quite honestly, to then turn around and do this. And we'll get into this a little bit more in the next hour. I'm very disappointed. I I've appreciated EWTN over the years. Sometimes it can be cheesy, but it's also exposed many, many people to the faith. I have been on there myself on the journey home back in 2008. But this really... This chaps me, I'll be honest with you. We'll be back with more. I will talk about this on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Thursday. I'm sorry, Wednesday. Getting ahead of myself. October 26th. Again, my question of the day. As I said, celebrated our 22-year-old daughter's birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Lizzie. My question is, what is your preferred birthday dessert? Your preferred birthday dessert. Would love to hear from you on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I already told you mine, piping hot blackberry cobbler with vanilla bean ice cream melting down over top of it. As I said, it has to be piping hot, and it has to be vanilla bean if you're going to get my attention. Anyway, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. Still no resolution for me for my bank account situation. This is becoming increasingly frustrating. Over the weekend, I was supposed to have one $107 payment withdrawn from my account for our local water and sewage company, and they withdrew 10 such payments. So almost $1,000 extra. And I'm now sitting on, after I called them Monday morning, first called the water company, and they said, well, it's the third-party company that we contract with that did that, so you'll have to contact them. I contacted them. I'm now sitting on 48 hours later. Still no resolution. Fortunately, my bank has been very patient, but that patience will run out, so... Never heard of anything like this happening in terms of the slowness. And they won't tell me when it'll be restored. Crazy. Anyway, I digress. Let's look back in history a little bit on this day. What are some things that happened October 26th across the ages? 1529, what I'm sure at the time he thought was a good thing. Sir Thomas More appointed Lord Chancellor of England by his good friend, King Henry VIII. Of course, just a few years later, More's head would be on the chopping block, quite literally. 1776, so 240 years ago today, Benjamin Franklin departed from America for France on a mission to seek French support for the American Revolution. I would say that all worked out pretty well. Probably, you know, we talked last week about the first bishop here in the state of Kentucky, Bishop Flaget, who was the Diocese of Bardstown. He left France because of the French Revolution and the anti-clergy violence. Probably if it hadn't been for the close relationship between America and France, he may never have come here. Of course, the French, I'm sure, looking for any opportunity to stick it to the British. 1881, on this day, Wyatt Earp and his two brothers and Doc Holliday all confronted Ike Clanton's gang in a gunfight at the OK Corral. Three members of Clanton's gang were killed. Earp's brothers were wounded. Still my favorite Wyatt Earp movie has got to be Tombstone, though I will admit I have not seen what is the classic one with Henry Fonda. It'll come to me. 1900, after 4 years of work, first section of the New York subway opens. 1911, 105 years ago, Mahalia Jackson, known as the Queen of Gospel Singing, was born. A voice of angels, I'll tell you that. Let's see, in 1946, Pat Sajak born. 70 years old, My Darling Clementine. That's the Henry Fonda movie. Anyway, I digress. 70 years old, Pat Sajak, still going strong on the Wheel of Fortune. Hillary Clinton, happy birthday to Secretary Clinton, who is 69 years old today. And happy birthday to Keith Urban, Australian singer who my daughter swoon over, is now 49 years old. You hear that, girls? He's my age almost. You got that? Let's see. 1962, Khrushchev sends a note to JFK offering to withdraw his missiles from Cuba if the U.S. closes its bases in Turkey. The offer is rejected. And on this day in 2001, President G.W. Bush signed the Patriot Act, giving authorities unprecedented ability to search, seize, detain, or eavesdrop in their pursuit of possible terrorists. In other words, really, probably in many ways, a sad day, a testimony of our willingness to trade liberty for security. And then on this day, 11 years ago, the Chicago White Sox ended their curse a year after the Red Sox ended theirs by defeating the Houston Astros 1-0 and 1-0 in Game 4. We were talking there in the last break about my frustration with EWTN and the fact that they turned away Michael Maturin of the American Solidarity Party because they were afraid that it would hurt their tax-exempt status. Let's see, Mary Pizzullo reports on this at her blog, Steel Magnificat. Some of you may already know that on October 15th, Mike Maturin, presidential candidate for the American Solidarity Party, reported that the Eternal Word television network had canceled an interview with him because, as they apparently told him, they were concerned about their nonprofit status. This is, of course, their business. Nonprofit organizations do have to be very careful to avoid the semblance of endorsing a political candidate, or they face the wrath of the IRS. However, Pizzullo reports, their nonprofit status was apparently not a concern today when Raymond Arroyo of EWTN's The World Over announced he would be airing an interview with Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump at 8 p.m. on Thursday. Among the topics under discussion are Trump's favorite saint and how he changed his mind about abortion. EWTN turned heads earlier this year, Pizzullo notes, and this is where Breadbox Media actually comes in, when the National Catholic Register, which is owned by the network, fired bloggers Simca Fisher and Mark Shea. Mark, of course, with The Daily Show on this program, on this network, Connecting the Dots, and Simca, his regular Monday guest. Fired bloggers Simca Fisher and Mark Shea, both of him are pro-life, outspoken critics of Trump and the Republican Party, claiming it was due to their lack of charity on social media. Now it seems they're at it again. Somehow it might hurt EWTN's tax-exempt status to interview the pro-life candidate for the American Solidarity Party, but not the scandal-fraught, allegedly pro-life candidate from the Republican Party. So, yeah, I agree with Mary Pizzullo and also for Sam Rocha, who writes in this on his blog on the Patheos channel as well. Yeah, EWTN, or at least Braymond Arroyo for sure here, has jumped the shark. You know, the jump the shark reference, right? The old Fonzie in the episode of Happy Days, in which Fonzie, in a trip to California, puts on skis, which I'm sure he'd had plenty of opportunity to practice there in Milwaukee. Anyway, he went and jumped a shark off a ski ramp in the ocean. And it kind of came, it's become a term for any time a show or really any enterprise has jumped, not necessarily a shark, but jumped over the wall of credulity, let's just say, into the ridiculous. So, you know, EWTN or Raymond Arroyo in particularly losing any pretense of their what had been suspected for years. And I think there have been many of us who have been guilty of this over the years, who have identified the Catholic faith with the Republican Party as some sort of almost equivalence. To be a Catholic means to embrace and to see the Republican Party as the really, in many ways, the guarantor, the advocate for human rights. I think, if anything, what's been exposed in this election is the illusion that that is, that there's plenty of issues of concern for a Catholic of principle on to many Republican politicians as well. And the fact that in many ways the pro-life voting bloc or community has been in many ways assumed, taken for granted, viewed as really being willing to sell our birthright for a mess of pottage. All one has to do as a political candidate is throw out the requisite bromides about being pro-life, and the pro-life voters are going to flock to them. And particularly when it's presented as, oh, yes, well, maybe we're not perfect, but we're not X. We're not Hillary Rodham Clinton. Well, maybe the proper response is, okay, no, on the abortion issue, you're certainly not. But what about these other issues? In fact, I wash my hands of both of you. I know there are many who are at this place in their life where they're at least in this election for sure, that's the conclusion they've drawn. And here's EWTN. It just all smells, I'll be honest with you. The getting rid of Mark Shea and Simca Fisher, the cutting Mike Manturin from an interview, and now what appears to be a very softball interview with Donald Trump. I mean, it'd be one thing if Arroyo was going to have him on and really challenge him on some things. I don't suspect that'll be the case at all. And certainly the breathless promos about the Donald revealing his favorite saint and what made him pro-life don't seem to suggest exactly any hard-hitting questions. That's the sad thing about what's happened in this election, is that there are some writers and public figures. Quite honestly, I'm not sure that my respect for them will ever be recovered because of what I sense to be a complete sellout and a willingness to receive whatever to excuse and justify Trump's behavior. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.